Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 252.
It's the Avengers Assemble podcast from the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net. Now, here's your host, Van Allen Plexico.
Hello, and welcome to the Avengers Assemble podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and today, for the first time, I guess, since we got this series started, I'm going to be going solo because I want to talk to you about a big upcoming feature we're going to be doing here. Several episodes over the next few weeks or months are going to be about primarily about Thanos. Now, the reason for that is because he is the primary featured villain pretty much in the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe up to date so far. I mean, he's the guy lurking in the background behind almost everything that's happened so far. And so we're going to be talking about him because a lot of people out there don't know a lot about Thanos. They know he's a guy that sits in his comfy chair and sends others out to do his bidding. But there's a deep and rich history of this character that was created by Jim Starlin way back in Iron Man number 55. And I'm just going to, today, in a fairly short episode here going solo, this is going to serve as an introduction to the much bigger episodes we have coming up that where we will be reviewing his career over the years, his interactions with the Avengers and others, particularly with Warlock and Captain Marvel, as well as the Avengers. And in pretty much the entire Marvel Universe at some points, when he's gotten really too big for his blue and gold britches. So this is going to be an introduction to the character, introduction and an overview of the places where he has appeared and the things that he has done. And so I'm just going to kind of lay out what we'll be talking about in the episodes to come. But yeah, because he will be such an important figure going forward. I mean, presumably he will be the main villain at least in the last of the four planned Avengers movies, and possibly in the third one, which comes up in a year or two as well. So let's recap. Let's look back at the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I mean, this is mostly going to be about the character and his appearance in the comics, but the reason we're talking about it is because he's such a featured part now of the movies. So let's go back and look at how he's worked his way up through the movies. He was first revealed, I believe, in the first Avengers movie as the figure behind the invasion of, I'm going to call them the Skrulls. I know the Chitauri or whatever, but basically they're the Skrulls. The Skrulls are part of the Fantastic Four property, so Fox has them instead of Marvel right now. So they were the Chitauri. But the infamous Battle of New York at the end of the first Avengers movie, we also saw that Thanos was basically sponsoring Loki's efforts in the first Avengers movie to do what he did to conquer the Earth and all that. So, and then in the time since then, of course, he played a very big role behind the scenes in the Guardians of the Galaxy first movie. And, you know, clearly his quest for the gemstones, the Infinity Stones, has been the background of a lot of what's happened so far. So let's just look at this character. He started out being created by Jim Starlin as sort of Jim Starlin's answer to Jack Kirby's Dark Side. Now, that takes us back to when Kirby left Marvel the first time. Again, a lot of this will be off the top of my head, but this is just the best I can do with my recollection of Marvel history. Again, we'll be doing lots of reading and research coming up in the weeks to come to bring you very comprehensive book by book, storyline by storyline breakdowns of Thanos's career of evil. Well, even he's not really evil, is he? He's nihilistic. So let's go back to Jack Kirby leaving Marvel the first time because he was not treated properly by the original Marvel regime. And he went to DC, and DC was delighted to have him. And one of the things that he did at DC was create the New Gods. And the New Gods needed a villain, a sort of Darth Vader before Darth Vader type of character, the big bad, you know, the devil character. And that was Darkseid. And Darkseid was such an impressive villain that Jim Starlin created a character similar to him, and that character was Thanos. So, Thanos is one of two sons of mentor of Titan. Titan, the moon of Saturn, holds an ancient high-tech civilization that has connections to, you know, I want to say the Eternals, the Kree, the Celestials, I don't know. And when you get really deep into Marvel mythology, it all kind of gets jumbled together. And honestly, off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly because there's so many different immortal races and there's so many different backgrounds and all this. But somehow or another, there's this super advanced civilization on Titan that Mentor is the leader of. And he had two sons. One is Eros, who later joined the Avengers as Star Fox, which is a terrible name. He's Eros. But the other son is Thanos. And Thanos, from his earliest days, became a lover and worshiper of death. He is a nihilist. He believes in nothing. And he wants to... Originally, he just sort of wanted to destroy everything because he hated everything and was a nihilist. Later, his infatuation with the personification in human form of death, as sort of this beautiful woman in a cloak and hood who sometimes turns into a skeleton to show that she really is death, he's in love with her, right? So that motivates a lot of what Thanos does during that really destructive phase of his. Now, I have to point out that as Thanos goes along, his character really does evolve and change, and I think becomes even more interesting because originally he was a truly frightening villain. He was just absolutely ruthless, deadly villain whose goal was not to subjugate but to destroy, okay? Then later his goal was to do whatever it took, including killing half the living beings in the universe, in order to impress his girlfriend, who was death herself. But in sort of his third phase as a character, Thanos became a very sort of amoral figure outside of the events of the Marvel Universe who could be called upon as needed to get a job done. And by that I mean, for example, Warlock could go to him because they've always had a certain relationship, which we'll get into in very great depth in the episodes to come. But Warlock could go to him and basically recruit him as a sort of a special agent on a very high level, on a very high scale, to take care of things such as the menace of the Magus, yeah. Warlock's evil, ruthless future self, among others. Okay, so Thanos modified himself through kind of like Doctor Doom through a combination of technology and sorcery. I believe Thanos incorporated both sorcerous powers and bionics, mechanical means into his body, so that he has all sorts of superpowers. He's very tough. He can blast you with energy blasts. He's strong. He can go toe-to-toe with Thor and the Thing simultaneously and stand up to them. He also has teleportation technology, so he can zip from place to place. He has a large starship. He's had different ones over the years. Sanctuary, he calls it, or Sanctuary 2. And he also has had at different times whole armies of many diverse alien races serving as soldiers, as cannon fodder or foot soldiers for him. And he's, like I said, he's worked with Warlock and Gamora and Pip many times. In fact, Gamora, he was sort of Gamora's adopted father. He rescued Gamora from a world that where she was about to be killed as a little girl, and took her aboard his ship, and basically brought her up and trained her to be "quote unquote" the deadliest woman in the universe. There's a great panel in one of the flashbacks in one of the issues, I forget which comic it was, showing him raising her, where a little toddler Gamora is sitting on the floor playing with a stuffed plush Thanos. So there's so much you can read into that. A plush, you know, stuffed animal type doll of Thanos himself, while Thanos sits in the background watching her play with a plush version of him. So Thanos first appears in Starlin's Iron Man 55, and it really introduced him as a schemer behind the scenes, sending out muscle. You know, I think the Blood Brothers were the two big guys he sends out to do his dirty work in that issue. But then he appears when Starlin takes over Captain Marvel, the original Marvel run, back in the mid-70s, from 25 to 32, I believe, in Captain Marvel, and in Avengers 125, and then in 33 to 34 of Captain Marvel as well. And this was the Cosmic Cube saga, where Thanos realized that the Cosmic Cube, this is sort of the first time we see Thanos on a quest to acquire some sort of object that would grant him all kinds of power. So he's after the Cosmic Cube because the Cosmic Cube lets you, you know, basically makes reality become whatever you imagine or want it to be. And, you know, as the Red Skull was always the one trying to get the Cosmic Cube as well. So Thanos wanted to use it, but it ends up, I believe he's making all the heroes age. Again, we'll go through all these stories in great detail, almost panel by panel, in the episodes to come, but this is just kind of an overview of what all has happened. So finally, he's defeated and he's trapped in the center of the universe. But eventually he's rescued by Sanctuary 2, his ship. And this brings us back to what I think is probably my favorite Thanos story ever. And there's several good ones, but this one I think is my favorite. Because in this one, which takes place, really it's set up in a lot of Warlock's issues, but really comes to a head in Avengers Annual number 7 and Marvel 2 and 1 Annual number 2. That's my favorite comic book story of all time, by the way. Avengers Annual 7 and Marvel 2 and 1 Annual number 2. I just absolutely love that story. Starlin does the art as well as the writing in it. But in this storyline, which is the second big Thanos storyline, it is revealed that Thanos is now trying to acquire all of the Infinity Gems. This is the first time he finds out about them and goes out trying to acquire them. Now, one of them we've seen right there in plain sight for a while. It's the green stone on Warlock's forehead, the Soul Gem. It's the Vampiric Soul Gem, which was really sort of a take on Alvoy's thought on Elric's Stormbringer sword, right? Because the way that Starlin originally portrayed the Soul Gem was that it was like a vampire thing that he barely controlled. He kept it on his forehead, and it would devour the souls of his defeated enemies and sometimes kind of come to his rescue when he's about to lose by zapping the enemy. But, you know, over time we discover that actually what the Soul Gem is doing is transporting the souls it steals to Soul World inside the gem, this idyllic paradise world inside the gym where everybody lives happily together, including all of Warlock's evil enemies who are there together hanging out, you know, eating grapes and sitting on the grass and frolicking about and enjoying each other's company. And so, and in fact, Warlock himself ends up there a couple of times, including during this story, but he returns to sort of finish it off. So expect a full episode pretty much just on that first Thanos versus the Avengers, Warlock and Captain Marvel story with the Infinity Gems. But now, and by the way, his evil scheme was he wanted to capture all of the Infinity Gems, not just Warlocks, but all, I guess, six of them, now that it's one of those things where I've never really thought about the number, and I just knew there were a handful literally on his glove. He has them put on his glove, and there's like one for each finger plus one on the top of the hand, maybe, so six, I think six. Okay. So it's the first time he really goes after them, but what he does with them, he doesn't yet understand perhaps that they can control reality. So instead he takes them and makes a giant synthetic gem out of them that powers an energy cannon on his ship that he is going to use to blow up stars. And he's going to keep blowing up suns, blowing up stars, until Death takes notice of him so he can be her boyfriend, basically. And of course, in a fantastic finale, he is defeated there after pretty much single-handedly wiping out the Avengers and Captain Marvel and Warlock and Warlock's supporting cast. Spider-Man ends up being the one to sort of save the day, more or less, by freeing Warlock. So that was that series. Then comes, I may miss a thing here. I may miss an issue here or two, but I'm just skimming along what I remember happens next. Then comes the great Death of Captain Marvel graphic novel by Jim Starlin. What happened there was Marvel had been trying to get Mar-Vell, Captain Marvel, going as a character, a successful character in their company for many years. He was, I believe that Captain Marvel, the blonde-headed Kree, Mar-Vell, was the last of the original wave of characters created by Stan Lee and, you know, the artist, whether Kirby or Ditko or whoever, depending on which character you're talking about. But Mar-Vell was Stan Lee's last major addition to the Marvel Universe. And, you know, for a while he was in his Kree uniform of green and white, flying around, zapping people with his gun. Then he was transformed into the blonde-headed guy in red and blue that we all know and love with the starburst on his chest. Then Jim Starlin got a hold of him and put him through another metamorphosis, and I believe he had white hair, actually. I apologize. I had to stop and say, I think he had white hair when he was a Kree soldier. He came to Earth with Yon Rogg and Una, who was the female officer on the ship that was in love with him, and they had sort of a triangle there that turned violent, and Mar-Vell has to fight Yon Rogg, his first archenemy, and I believe Una is killed during that storyline, and so Mar-Vell is left on Earth and decides to become sort of the protector of Earth from the Kree. He's sort of like with a Silver Surfer. He sees a nobility in humans and in the Earth, and he wants to protect Earth from the Kree ever coming back to mess with us. So he stays on Earth in various guises. Like I said, Jim Starlin got a hold of him and transformed him somewhere in the 20s, I want to say, into the blonde-headed defender of the universe who has the, what do you call it, the cosmic awareness. The being known as Eon transforms him, makes his costume look a little bit different, has blonde hair, and he's now he's the protector of the universe, and he has cosmic awareness so he can tell when he's needed anywhere, almost like a cosmic spider sense in a way. And so now he's about as powerful. Oh, and also, yeah, the version of him first in red and blue with white hair before Starlin, that version of Mar-Vell could fly, and he would punch things, and he had the Nega bands on his wrist that when he banged together, he would swap places with Rick Jones. Rick Jones had been in the negative zone. Rick Jones would come to Earth. Mar-Vell would go to the negative zone and vice versa. This was a play on the DC Shazam Captain Marvel, who would swap places with Billy Batson, I believe. So they were making, sort of funny that Marvel was intentionally making their Captain Marvel more like DC's Captain Marvel. A quick aside on that, and again, we'll talk about this in more detail later, but the deal was that Captain Marvel had been published, I think, by Fawcett, maybe? Some of you, again, know this stuff better than me. And DC had acquired him, but they'd let the copyright or the trademark lapse. And so Marvel pounced on the chance to get a character named basically after their company, right? Or their company had the same name as. So they got Captain Marvel. So when DC, and they've kept their copyright, their trademark active all these years. So when DC publishes the red-clad, dark-haired Superman-type character, they have to call it Shazam because they can't call it Captain Marvel. And, of course, Marvel has kept a number of characters in play over the years named Captain Marvel to keep that copyright or trademark alive. More on that later. Certainly when we talk about the Avengers later on in later episodes, we'll talk about the Monica Rambeau Captain Marvel, as well as the Genis Vell Captain Marvel, and ultimately the Carol Danvers Captain Marvel, who's getting her own movie, or as I like to call her, Ms. Marvel, because that's who I always think she'll think of her as. So anyway, so in the death of Captain Marvel, Jim Shooter, the editor-in-chief at Marvel, I believe it was at that time, went to Jim Starlin and says, look, we have tried to make a go of this character, but he always gets canceled. It's like nobody knows what to do with him to make him a successful ongoing character. So we would like to just go ahead and give him a big send-off and kill him off. And you, Jim Starlin, are clearly the guy to get that job done, to do it right, to do it memorably. And we'll do it not in a comic book, but in Marvel's first graphic novel, where they put out a square-bound trade paperback, small size book that was an original story. And so the very first Marvel graphic novel, I have it somewhere here behind me on my bookcase, the very first edition of it, I have that, was The Death of Captain Marvel. And Jim Starlin sent Mar-Vell out in an interesting story that I didn't fully appreciate as a kid. I mean, I knew it was well written, but it was kind of disappointing to me that a great warrior would go out basically in bed rather than dying with his boots on, as they say. But again, much more about this later when we talk about the individual stories, because I also plan on talking a great deal about what really turned out to be Mar-Vell's last great hurrah when Doug Moench and Pat Broderick took over his series in the last several issues before it ended, and did a fantastic, fantastic storyline involving Isaac, the computer that controls Titan. That is one of the absolute best and most underrated stories that Marvel has ever put out. I don't think it's ever been collected anywhere in a trade paperback, which is an utter shame because it's a fantastic story. And we'll talk about it in great detail coming up in a future episode. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to talking about that storyline. And his book was canceled, and he jumped over to Marvel Spotlight, where that story finished in the first, I want to say, three issues of Marvel Spotlight. But then ultimately, that was canceled too, and Jim Starlin killed him off in the graphic novel I was speaking of. So with the death of Captain Marvel to cancer, of all things, Thanos no longer had that main enemy, but he still had, and of course Warlock was dead too, and of course Thanos was dead too. So now Warlock, Thanos, Gamora, Pip, and Captain Mar-Vell were all dead at this point. So then comes the Silver Surfer series that gives us the rebirth of Thanos, and then eventually the rebirth of Warlock, Gamora, and Pip. Everybody comes back except Mar-Vell. He's the only one. I've always said that when we got Bucky back, I said, okay, what we now know is that there's only two characters in the Marvel Universe that are dead forever, and that is Uncle Ben, Spider-Man's Uncle Ben, and Captain Mar-Vell. We'll also talk later on about what Peter David did with little Captain Marvel, Genis Vell, who was an interesting character, who I think they had as little understanding of what to do with him as they did with his dad. And of course, his Mar-Vell's daughter has popped up a lot over the years, too, in the Guardians of the Galaxy. That would be Phyla Vell, who was, I believe, I want to say Moondragon's girlfriend for a while. Interesting. Okay, so we'll get into all that later on. Because it's all so intertwined with the Avengers and Thanos and that history over the years. Plus, it's just absolutely awesome, so we're going to talk about it on here. So then came, like I said, the Thanos quest for the gemstones. It's a great story where he goes around and gets them back. Apparently, the stones after... After the story where he was blowing up all the stars in the universe... I want to say it was either one of two things. Either the people who had the stones got them back, or he never actually got the stones other than Warlocks. He just siphoned their power into that synthetic stone. Well, now in this story, he actually goes out and defeats the various beings who have those gems, the Infinity Stones, and he is going to use them to actually become God, basically, controller of all reality. And that brings us to the Infinity Gauntlet, where he's literally got a gauntlet, a glove, one of his big brownish, goldish, whatever gloves, with the Infinity Gems fastened into it. And when he gets all of those, he becomes God Almighty himself, able to control, I think we said six, right? All six aspects. I'm going to try to name them here, and I'm going to mess up, okay? But it's like there's power, which powers all the others. There's the soul that Warlock had. There's the mind. So power, soul, mind. And then there's time, space. And I knew I would forget one. I knew it. There's another one. Anyway, I told you it was dangerous for me to try it, and sure enough, and half of the audience out there is yelling at me right now what the sixth one is. I'm sorry I can't hear you. It doesn't work that way. But you know, and we'll talk about it. We'll get them when we talk about them in depth. Okay, so the Infinity Gauntlet, Thanos, is a great storyline where Starlin now is to the point of just writing, and other people are drawing it, and... Warlock becomes the field general. He's brought back, he and Warlock and Gamora and Pip are brought back from the dead in new bodies, which immediately look like their old bodies. And nobody ever answered the question, by the way, if Gamora came back from the dead and inhabits a new body, how does she still have all of her internal modifications and bionics and stuff? Maybe Starlin addressed that, but I don't know if he ever did. He might have addressed it in the Infinity Watch. But I'm not sure. Anyway, so the Infinity Gauntlet plays out, and again, we'll have a whole show just about that in depth. Ultimately, Thanos is defeated, and it turns out he kind of wanted to be defeated. He never fully, because he couldn't ever get Death to pay attention to him. He's starting to become a multifaceted character at this time. And so after Infinity Gauntlet, you get the Infinity Watch. The Infinity Watch is a group put together by Warlock and Gamora and Pip and Drax, the Destroyer, in his form he was in at that time, which was basically like the Hulk, which I was very disappointed in. I like the old Drax, the Destroyer, that was normal shape with a big cape, and he could fly and fire energy blasts, and he was intelligent. But Moondragon burned out his brain, basically turning him into an idiot. And he became all bulked up like the Hulk and lost his energy blasts, but became stronger. Okay, whatever. This was basically called the Infinity Trilogy. So after Infinity Gauntlet and the Infinity Watch starts up, we get Infinity War. Now, what had been happening was the cosmic beings of the Marvel Universe had decreed, and I guess really the Living Tribunal is the main one. He seems to be the king of the cosmic entities. Had decreed that the Infinity Gems should be divided up with guardians. Each one should have a guardian. And so Warlock keeps his soul gem, but the other gems go to Drax and Moondragon. and Pip and Gamora. And one of them is the hidden gem. Then we all kind of knew who had it. Because like I said, he was getting more multifaceted as a character, that certain person. And so they were protecting the gems. And they had an ongoing series for a while that sort of alternated between... the enemy of the weak, like Man-Beast or something, and... or robots attacking. It was interesting. They were on Monster Island. It was like they were renting a base from the Mole Man, which was kind of cool. And so it was sort of alternating between random Marvel villain of the week and cosmic, you know, infinity related, Thanos related stuff. And that series went on for quite a while. It's a good thing. I just recently acquired it. I had been reading some of it back in the day, back in the 90s. It's very 90s, particularly in its art. And many of you know what I mean when I say very 90s in its art. This is the era right around when the image artists broke away and all that. With their hyper stylized art, hyper detailed stylized, not very realistic art. Where everybody's scowling and everybody's screaming and everybody's got 8,000 little hairs sticking out of their head. You know, you can count each one. And, you know, the whole Liefeld, McFarlane period there. But I got the two trade paperbacks and they're very enjoyable if you can take them for what they are, right? Which is just cool Jim Starlin cosmic storylines and just kind of ignore the art. So then came the Infinity War. Infinity War was awesome because now, it had a huge crossover, of course. This was a mega crossover, but one of the neat things about, Infinity War, a 6-issue limited series like Infinity Gauntlet, you now had the Magus being the main villain, and Thanos is on the good side. And that's when Thanos, to me, really gets interesting, is when he starts helping the good guys. Because, of course, nobody trusts him, and they shouldn't. Nobody likes him, and they shouldn't. But Warlock understands Thanos well enough to be able to work with him. And that relationship, to me, is so fascinating. Because just a few years earlier, they had been mortal enemies and had basically taken turns killing each other. Right, first Thanos killed Warlock and took the gem, and then Warlock killed Thanos. But now they're both back, and they've kind of gotten older and wiser in a way. And after the experience of Infinity Gauntlet, Thanos had realized that that maybe his old ways weren't necessarily the best. He'd gotten a little wiser. And so you get this neat deal where Thanos is now more or less helping the good guys through Infinity War against the Magus. And we'll talk a lot about him later, because the Magus is basically in the future Warlock becomes an evil dictator with purple skin and a cool afro that he pulls into a little man ponytail in Infinity War. I've always said in Jim Starlin's universe, one of the ways you know you're a cosmically evil villain is if you have a really cool afro. So throughout the Infinity War, Thanos is kind of helping the good guys, and we have a big battle with the Magus. That continues, spills over into Infinity Watch, the Warlock and the Infinity Watch. And then after that, we get the third installment, and probably the least satisfying, which is the Infinity Crusade. And it took me a couple of tries to get through Infinity Crusade. I have it on my Kindle, on my iPad, because I read it, I think, back in the day, and I just didn't like it. Not very much happens in it. Basically, if the Magus is Warlock's evil part that he's separated from himself, then the goddess is like Warlock's good part, and it is good in an evil sort of way. It's so good that it has evil plans. I know that that's a contradiction, doesn't make a lot of sense, but we'll talk about it in more detail later on, because we kind of have to. But a tremendous proportion of the Infinity Crusade storyline involves the heroes all standing around in a big room talking, issue after issue. And maybe one or two of them will go do something and come back, but mainly they're all just standing around in this big room talking, and not a lot actually happens in that storyline, which is unfortunate. And it continues in through Infinity Watch, and Thanos does some more stuff. There's also the Infinity Abyss. There's a few others. After that, I got to be honest with you, folks. After that story, we get a lot of Thanos here and there, not done particularly well. And there's a storyline, the Infinity Abyss, the Thanos Imperative. You actually have an appearance of Thanos in the Pet Avengers around this time, the late 90s. No, mid-2000s is when that happens. I'm sorry, I was thinking about a different thing. Now, I will say this. The Guardians of the Galaxy that were being published in the mid-2000s, that was an excellent series. Dan Abnett writing it, and for a long section of it, Paul Pelletier, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, drawing it. Those comics are fantastic, and you get some Thanos, you get some Magus in it. So they kind of bring that stuff back. And I got to say that in Dan Abnett's hands, those characters are portrayed about as well as they had been by anybody other than Jim Starlin, if not as well as Jim Starlin. So those are really good. But then eventually, there's some that I haven't even read, and we'll talk about them as we go along later. And that we come to Infinity. And Infinity brings Thanos back, but now he's just a big villain. And I read Infinity is really more about a race of alien conquerors coming. Thanos is almost a side story to it, and the art is gorgeous, the panel to panel writing of the dialogue and everything is good, but the overall story to me was just poorly executed. There were not enough interesting moments in it. It drags from chapter to chapter. Thanos is not characterized as well as I would have liked to have seen him characterized. And so overall, I was very disappointed in it. Now, there have been a variety of Infinity things and Thanos things kind of ever since then. I'll be reading those in the days to come myself, I guess, in preparation for talking about them. But to me, and I'm going to kind of wrap things up here in this brief introductory episode, to me, the heart, the core of Thanos as a character and of his relation to the Avengers is found back there in those first two or three great storylines in the Cosmic Cube story, in the Avengers Annual Number 7, Marvel 2-in-1 Annual Number 2 story, and then in the particularly in the Infinity Gauntlet, where Thanos himself is the villain. That is the core, that is the heart of Thanos' story in the Marvel Universe, and I recommend them highly. Like I say, I do like how he grew as a character and changed as you go into Infinity War and beyond and Infinity Watch. I really do like that too. But, you know, he becomes a more interesting character, but not as good of a villain after that. So he becomes more like an amoral supporting character that you can go get kind of in the vein of like the Submariner, right? Because sometimes the Submariner's a hero, sometimes he's a villain. He's just sort of the amoral off to the... At least that's the way he comes across the heroes. I mean, in his mind, he's completely moral. But to the heroes, the Submariner always comes across as like an amoral, powerful guy off to the side, and you don't know which side he's going to be on. And that's kind of what Thanos becomes during and after Infinity War. So, fascinating character. I love Thanos a lot. He's got a great look. He looks like a purple big Skrull, even though he has no connection to them. They just bumpy chins or something that happens, apparently, in the Marvel Universe. Now, to bring it full circle as we conclude here, in the movies, I'm afraid that we're really seeing the one-note early Thanos, who is the schemer, who covets the Infinity Gems or other objects of power, and who manipulates and sends other people out to do his bidding. And so far, we've seen him do that with Loki and with Ronan the Accuser. Now, any being capable of using both Loki and Ronan the Accuser as pawns is pretty powerful, pretty dangerous, pretty threatening, and pretty impressive. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with Thanos. What I'm really looking forward to seeing is how much depth and character do they give him in the movies. You know, movies don't really afford you very much time to develop a character. You're kind of a one-note being in a movie. Very rarely do we see characters change and grow over the course of just one movie or two movies, particularly this kind of a story where you have to have so much action and plot and other stuff going on as well. So I'm curious to see how much they do with him, because think about this. In the comic books, Ronan the Accuser went from one-note villain all the way to being marrying Crystal the Inhuman and bringing her a bouquet of flowers. And Ronan in the movie Guardians of the Galaxy never came anywhere close to that layer of depth, right? You can't even imagine Ronan the Accuser from the movie going up to a female hero and offering her a bouquet of flowers. Not in your wildest imagination could you see something like that happening. Whereas in the comics, it happened. That was in Dan Abnett and Pelletier's Guardians of the Galaxy run, which was so fantastic. So anyway, I'm curious to see what becomes of Thanos in the movies. How in depth do they make him versus do they just make him a one-note villain that fights and gets defeated probably in the end? That should be really fascinating to see. And I mean, they can make a perfectly great storyline where he's just a vanilla plain villain, or maybe a chocolate villain or a strawberry villain. I don't know. But just a one note villain. They could still do a very good quality story and not give him any depth at all. You know, they may just use him as like the devil character, just the purely evil. So we will see. And again, I'm also curious to see, now that they've said that Avengers 3 and Avengers 4 are going to basically be two separate movies and not part 1 and part 2 of the same story, I'm curious to see how that will affect how they use Thanos. Will maybe part 1, Avengers 3, will be him gathering the stones together finally, kind of like the Thanos quest, and part 4 will be like the Infinity Gauntlet? Could be. Will we see Celestials? We saw him in Guardians of the Galaxy. Will we see, you know, who knows? Who knows what we'll see, but it should be a really fun ride. All right, so let's wrap it up. That's been sort of my brief introduction to Thanos and his career and his interactions with the Avengers and Avengers-related characters. In the episodes to come, my guest hosts and I'm thinking David Wright will be in for at least some of this, but we'll have other guest hosts too. My guests and I will be digging through in great detail the Thanos history in the Marvel Universe, and what it all might mean for the movies coming up. So that will do it for this week and this episode. Be sure to visit our sponsor, our host company, White Rocket Entertainment, at whiterocketbooks.com. Whiterocketbooks.com. I think you need the www on the beginning of that. We have two books about the Avengers, Assembled 1 and Assembled 2, that are on Amazon, or you can find them at whiterocketbooks.com. Be sure to rate the show on iTunes if you're able to. Give us a 5-star rating and show us that you love the Avengers and love our show as we continue to try to bring you the best of discussion and conversation and exploration of Marvel's great Avengers and everything peripheral to them. All right, we're going to get on out of here, and we'll see you guys coming up in a couple of weeks when we probably get into the Cosmic Cube saga. And, of course, we'll do other episodes as we go along talking about other Avengers-related things. Mark Busquet and I, for example, will soon be covering the Thor movie, the first Thor movie, in a full review, which should be a lot of fun. So we'll see you guys later, and as always, Avengers Assemble.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Hi, I'm Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, and I'm also the art director over at White Rocket Books. Quick question, what do you get when you take a fast-paced Alistair MacLean novel, put it in a blender with a Star Trek DVD, and some G.I. Joe figures? I'm pretty sure you get award-winning sci-fi novelist Van Allen Plexico's first foray into the world of comics, a new comic miniseries based on Plexico's novella Cold Lightning. Cold Lightning is a small part of Plexico's expansive space opera series of novels called The Shattering. Now, real quick, I want to give a quick heartfelt thank you to all the folks who helped us reach our crowdfunding goal over on GoFundMe. We are so excited to get this comic series underway. Now, depending on when you hear this ad, we're either still working away on this space adventure, or it may be available already. The best way to find out is to head over to whiterocketbooks.com and see what the latest is. While you're there, you can look into all the novels of the Shattering series or Plexico's very popular Sentinels novel series. There's plenty to see, so come check us out. Once again, that's whiterocketbooks.com.